Chapter 19. Dr. Brown, if you ever decide to leave the field of medicine, let me know, and I'm sure you can find a job in my department overseeing the construction of a new hospital. The Inspector General of Civil Hospitals made this remark in jest to the doctor after she had done what his department and the Public Works Department had said was impossible. In 1922, the government made a grant of 80,000 rupees, along with 3.5 acres of land, for the extension of the hospital and construction of a maternity block. With great excitement and pleasure, Dr. Brown and her staff drew up the plans and sent them to the PWD for approval. However, to their keen disappointment, the plans were returned in a few days with a short remark, "Impossible for 80,000 rupees." The doctor wrote of their disappointment to the ICGH. By return mail, they sent her a check for the entire 80,000 rupees with a note saying, "Do what you can with it." PWD officers gave her technical advice and guidance without charge. Having a good Christian overseer on her staff, she felt no need to hire a contractor. The plans were checked and the work begun. Day by day, Dr. Brown watched the buildings grow, wondering how much could be completed. Great was her relief and thanksgiving when, by the time of the next government inspection, not only the maternity block, but also a row of storerooms, above them a well-lighted room designed to be a pathology laboratory, were completed, all within the amount of the government grant. At the same time, quarters were constructed for resident days in training from a grant of rupees 5,000 from the municipal committee. Lady Haley formally opened the new block on December 18, 1924. In the same year, plans were made for construction of a laboratory for physics and chemistry, which had been added as curriculum subjects 2 years before. The government allowed 9,000 rupees out of a grant given for physiology equipment to be used for the construction. To this amount was added 500 pounds given in 1921 as a further grant from the Arlington Fund, so a double-storied, solidly built laboratory was constructed in the college grounds. The ground floor was to be used for physiology and pathology, while the upper floor would care for physics and chemistry. In 1923, the Maharaja of Nabha had made a gift of 2,000 rupees toward building a Sikh dining room and a further gift of 10,000 rupees for the installation of electricity through the institution. To this was added $300 from friends in Canada and a number of special gifts from England, so that a special powerhouse was constructed and electric light was made available to the entire college and hospital by the end of 1924. At times, there was difficulty with the powerhouse, and Edith Brown often wished she had an engineer on her staff. The number of new students increased. In 1922, there were 70 students, and in 1924, there were 83. At no point was there a lessening of activity, initiative, or drive on her part because of the crisis with the General Committee. In this same period, the doctor herself was being rewarded for services rendered to the province and the nation. On October 20, 1922, Sir Edward McLaughlin, governor of the Punjab, and Lady McLaughlin visited the Women's Christian Medical College. There, before a distinguished assembly, His Excellency said, "We all know how well this institution has done in the community and the name it has acquired for itself, and I congratulate Dr. Brown and her staff on the progress that has been made. It is a special pleasure to us to be able to come today, a day on which I have been privileged to present the gold Kaiser Ahind Medal to Dr. Brown. We all know with what devoted industry and ability she has furthered the cause of this institution, and it has been an extraordinary pleasure to me to be here and to convey to you the recognition of her work on the part of government." In 1922, Edith Brown received the further honor of election as a Fellow of Punjab University and appointment as a member, one of 11, of the university body of the Punjab State Medical Faculty. After the reorganization of the medical college in 1924, the way ahead was made clear only by the light of faith. Dr. Brown squarely faced the difficulties with the certainty that her faith would provide the answer. The registration of the new constitution means that we need several new members of the staff, 4 doctors and 2 sisters. One of the chief reasons brought forward for the omission of a basis of faith from the Constitution was that it was said it would not be possible in these days to find a staff of doctors and nurses who would sign a statement of faith. This we feel sure is not the case, and we would earnestly ask help for this reinforcement before October 1925. We would also ask much prayer for guidance in all the present perplexities and in all approaching developments of the work, and for the power of the Holy Spirit in the lives of both staff and students. Dr. Margaret McKellar, new president of the governing body, strongly supported Miss Brown in her religious stand and in her report emphasized utter dependence upon God for all future needs. Thanking our God for the bygone days, trusting in Him in the unknown ways, ready to love, to serve, and to praise, and leaving to Him the rest. Faith was rewarded. The long-awaited and hoped-for quarters for nurses and sisters became a reality in 1927. The need to acquire land for this project had delayed building, but prayer was answered and the government made the land available just when 45,000 rupees had been accumulated for construction. In accordance with Dr. Brown's expectations, the staff shortages were overcome. She wrote about the year 1927, "We thank the Lord for the happy cooperation of a splendid staff, which is larger in number than ever before. 9 doctors, 1 scientist, 2 pharmacists, 7 sisters, 2 evangelists, and we are praying that soon more may come." Patients continued to be admitted in increasing numbers, and always room had to be found for them. Comparing the Ludhiana Hospital with a typical English hospital, Dr. Brown warned the visitor to put away all recollections of the British hospital with its spotless wards and double rows of snowy beds. "Our walls are whitewashed instead of tiled. Our floors are cracked stone, and our bedding is sadly deficient. Mattresses are only kept for bedridden patients, pillows for those who need to be propped up. There are not enough sheets to go around, though we have a fair supply of blankets. Another difference is that our walls are elastic. We have no waiting list, and no patient is ever turned away. When the wards are full, we put charpoy along the verandas and under the trees in the courtyard, so that the available accommodation is all but limitless." Dr. Brown maintained a sensitivity to the winds of change as they blew across the country. She sought to place the institution at the heart of the nation's need, not just for that day, but for the epoch-making years which were just ahead. Paramount among the needs she visualized was that of public health work. In 1927, she charted the course for the future in this particular area. "One of our graduate nurses and a graduate compounder have gone to health school for special training and will soon be ready for work in June, and we are hoping that Miss Carlton, who is to join our nursing staff next year, will come out with a health diploma which will enable her to take charge of this branch of work. It is coming to the front very much in India, and the training is necessary for our students and will become more so as years go on." Within 6 months, 2 health centers had been opened, one at the maternity block and one at the Mission Girls' School. This latter had been formerly the Charlotte Hospital, which had finally closed down in 1913. On the opening of these centers, Dr. Brown said, "The importance of preventive medicine is being realized more and more and needs to be impressed on the young doctors." Coupled with the public health program was a concern about the scourge of tuberculosis. This necessitated a new emphasis upon X-ray and the need for equipment, as the original X-ray machine had been retired from service. Further, there was need for a tuberculosis specialist who would also be the radiologist. Edith Brown issued a call to prayer on the matter. "Tuberculosis is an ever-increasing menace and is an urgent call with open doors. We believe that the Lord means us to respond, and the difficulties in the way are an added incentive to prayer and faith. Faith in Him with whom nothing is impossible." Prayer was answered. An anonymous gift of £800 was received in England for the needed X-ray machine. Another gift of 5,000 rupees came from Mrs. Hack of Jalandhar, who wanted to give a memorial for a friend, Mrs. David, who had formerly been a patient. It was agreed that the X-ray block to house the new machine would be an excellent memorial. The Arthington Fund trustees promised £200 for 3 years, which was allocated to the X-ray and tuberculosis work. Further unanticipated help came in the form of a gift of 4,500 rupees as a personal gift from Lady Irwin, wife of the Viceroy. She had marked it for your tuberculosis scheme. Greatest joy of all came with the announcement of the appointment of a doctor who was trained in tuberculosis and X-ray work, Dr. Rose A. Rist from the United States. Dr. Rist was quickly inducted into the work and began reaching out to many of the homes of Ludhiana in pursuit of tuberculosis victims. It was not an easy task to get this program underway, as she indicated in her reports. Dr. Brown's newest child, which, by the way, turned out to be twins, is having a bit of a struggle to grow properly. These are the tuberculosis and X-ray departments. The tuberculosis cases are always with us, represented in hospital largely by surgical types, that is, intestinal, glandular, and bone. During the past 6 months, 14 of these patients have been operated on. It is our ambition to give considerable pneumothorax treatment with the diagnostic aid of the X-ray. The financial and political situation of these years gave cause for concern. In 1928, there was considerable discussion in government circles about the possibility of reopening the Women's Medical School in Lahore. It would cost the government £250,000 to build the new school, whereas their grant to the Ludhiana School was £6,000 per year. The loss of that sum from the college finances would be devastating. By 1930, the threat had not developed. Instead, the government gave extra grants of 8,000 rupees for the outpatients department and 7,500 rupees for new apparatus. However, many societies have begun to feel a financial strain due to depressive conditions at home. Contributions to the school were lower, and fewer mission posts were available for graduates, forcing them into private practice. In Punjab itself, there was a state of financial distress. Some of this was due to political picketing of merchants, which brought some to a point of bankruptcy. Others claimed that the low price of grain robbed them of any margin of profit. In the hospital, while the number of inpatients increased considerably, the fees dropped by over 5,000 rupees. Owing to the poverty of the province, the municipal grant in aid to the hospital was cut 12.5%. No grant was given for the public health work, and the government grant was lessened by 3,000 rupees. The situation looked desperate, but Dr. Brown was not daunted. Indeed, if it were not for our Lord, the possessor of heaven and earth, whose arm is not shortened, the prospect would be depressing. But as it is, we lift up our eyes to him and rejoice to feel that the very increase of our need is his opportunity for a fuller supply, and we step forward with our hand in his and meet the new year with faith and courage. The doctor had learned in the Lord's work that when one door closed, a new one opened. In April 1929, when the financial situation appeared grave, Dr. Brown and Dr. Margaret McKellar, chair of the governing body, arranged to take a 4-month trip to England. The visit was highly successful, and many new friends and supporters were secured through their efforts. They addressed 44 meetings in England, Scotland, and Ireland, and were present at the Keswick Convention, where many heard Dr. Brown speak at a specially arranged meeting. She also broadcast a talk on the work of the college from the London station of the British Broadcasting Corporation. The story of the Women's Christian Medical College had become well known. Dr. Brown had become renowned for her work as a surgeon, medical educator, administrator, and champion of downtrodden women. Highest recognition of this work was given by King George V in the New Year's Honors List for 1932. Dr. Edith Brown, principal of the Women's Christian Medical College, Ludhiana, to be Dame Commander, Civil Division, of the most excellent order of the British Empire. This small, plainly dressed, insignificant-appearing woman appeared somewhat out of place in the magnificent grandeur of the viceregal residence. Here she was received in the throne room by the viceroy, Lord Willingdon, to be invested with the insignia of the new rank to which she had been exalted. With a quiet dignity and simplicity, she carried her new title, Dame Edith Brown. Significant in these honors were, the greatest in the eyes of Edith Brown, was the love which the graduates maintained for their college, and the good reports of their significant work among the women and children in all parts of India. One 1904 graduate, Dr. Grace Sohan Lal, expressed her love and appreciation for the institution by making a bequest to the college. This was used to build a pathology museum. Other graduates and students contributed significant items of equipment and books. At the time of financial strain, the graduates all over the country contributed to the support of beds in the hospital. Stories arrived almost daily of the work of these women, often in very isolated stations. Mostly these were reports of the uphill struggle against entrenched tradition and ignorance. One such was the story of Dr. Ruth Virana, one of the first four graduates of the school, who was working almost unassisted at the King Edward Memorial Hospital, Rohtak. One day, while she was alone, her midwife helper being on sick leave, a village cart arrived at the hospital, bringing a woman who was in great distress. It was about time for her delivery. Dr. Virana diagnosed that twins were about to be born. The patient's condition gave rise to serious misgiving, but the doctor knew that she had to take courage and handle the case alone. One baby arrived, then the second. Still, the mother seemed to gain little relief. What could be wrong? Still another baby, then a fourth and a fifth. There was no one to see to their breathing, so the doctor wrapped each in a blanket while she turned all her skill towards saving the exhausted mother. At last, she could give her attention to the babies. There were five healthy Brahmin boys, but who was to take care of them? The mother was too ill, and no other woman from the village would defile herself because custom and tradition taught that mothers and babies were unclean for 40 days after the baby's birth. An appeal to the civil surgeon produced no result. The bond of tradition was too tight. The birth of twins was considered unlucky. Therefore, the village felt that the birth of quintuplets must be the work of evil spirits. By the next day, the question of feeding had become acute. Another message circulated throughout the town brought negative results. The deputy commissioner offered to pay for nurses if they could be procured from a distance. While waiting, Dr. Virana did her best. There were other patients to attend, outpatients to be seen, the mother to be cared for, and before help could arrive, all the five babies were dead. The courageous Indian woman doctor had dared to defy convention by attending to the mother in her hour of need. This was the lesson she had been taught at Ludhiana by Dr. Brown. Dr. Brown never allowed her students to forget that the service they rendered was in the name of Christ, and always they must witness to this fact. She objected strongly to the report of the American Layman's Committee. We had been led to make a strong protest against the acceptance of the report and recommendation of Rethinking Missions Committee when they advised that the kingdom of God should be spread only by good medical work and silent contacts and contagion without any spoken message. How can we be silent with such a glorious message to give and such a clear command to give it? Heal the sick and preach the gospel. This attitude did not help to strengthen lines of communication between the college and church council leaders in India. As a consequence, Ludhiana was not represented nor consulted in the medical section of the Madras Conference in 1938. Dr. Donald Gray Barnhouse of Philadelphia wrote of this grave omission from the great ecumenical gathering. Indian women doctors, graduates of Ludhiana, are now working in every part of India under 26 missionary societies. Yet the missionary leaders who prepared the reports on medical schools for the Madras Conference left Ludhiana out because it has a doctrinal basis and refuses to abandon or diminish its eight-point creed, which includes belief in the great essential doctrines of the Christian faith. Yet the Ludhiana schools are fully accredited by the Indian and British governments, and two-fifths of its budget has been received from government. For 44 years, Edith Brown had labored for the day when the college would be affiliated with the university for the MBBS degree. Many times it seemed within grasp, only to recede again. Finally, in 1938, the joyful news was received that the Senate of Punjab University had granted affiliation for the Women's Christian Medical College to the first professional MBBS examination. Every effort would have to be put forward to upgrade the departments involved in the second professional examination in order that full affiliation would be granted within 2 years. This meant the need for more funds, more equipment, and more qualified staff. However, the advent of World War II in September 1939 caused a setback. Staff members left to join military service. New personnel could not be recruited from home. Needed material became scarce and prices went up alarmingly. The difficulties were increased by political deterioration and instability. Objections were raised in the Provincial Assembly to the giving of grants to a Christian institution, with the result that the grant was cut by £1,000. Student allowances were restricted to Punjabi students, which meant that no help was given for three-quarters of the Christian students who came from other parts of India. As these dark clouds gathered, Dr. Brown would daily lift her eyes to the two mottos hanging on her wall, "My work is for a king," and "He made darkness his secret place." These had undergirded her for many years, and surely God would cause light to shine out of darkness again. November 1941 was a month for those at the college when even the darkness of the war news could not dampen their exuberant spirit. It was the month of Jubilee, the celebration of Dr. Brown's golden anniversary as a medical missionary. On November 8 through 10, graduates, friends, mission, and church representatives from all over India gathered to pay homage to this dedicated pioneer. A united communion service was held on Sunday morning, and in the evening a service of thanksgiving was conducted in the United Church of North India. The Bishop of Lahore had written a special service for it. All day Monday, addresses were received from members of the church and city, tokens of gratitude from a thankful community for 50 years of dedicated service. High point of the day was the official gathering in the assembly hall, presided over by Mr. McLeod, the commissioner of the division. The climax of the program came when Mrs. Sewa Subramaniam, oldest living graduate and one of the first class enrolled in 1895, read the address on behalf of all the graduates. Thus they honored this one who had become like a mother to them and who had labored so hard to open the field of medicine to Indian women. Tributes poured in from all sides, and a check for 20,000 rupees was presented to Dr. Brown from friends and old students. This would be held until the end of the war, when a new hospital would be constructed to meet the requirements of the upgraded MBBS course. For many years, the governing body had been concerned about the transition which would come when Dr. Brown could no longer be principal because of illness, infirmity, or other reasons. By the time of her golden jubilee, she had reached the age of 77, and many felt that this was the time to bring about the changes in administration, while Dr. Brown would still be available to counsel her successor. The doctor did not feel in accord with his plans. Her health was good. Mentally, she was alert as she had ever been, and she was still psychologically the leader of the institution. The governing body firmly, but with understanding consideration, sided against her, and the mantle of leadership fell upon the shoulders of Dr. Eileen M. S. Pollock, who had been on the faculty since 1928 and had been superintendent of the hospital since 1941. Dr. Brown was given the title Principal Emeritus and the duties of Honorary Treasurer, together with lifetime membership of the governing body and all other committees. She also remained a member of the teaching faculty. The ensuing years were not easy. Dr. Brown was a born leader, and for her, any other role was unnatural. This school was her flesh and blood. She had brought it to birth and mothered it for almost 50 years. She could not avoid caring for its development, maintenance, and administration, and this did not make Dr. Pollack's task easy. The situation was further complicated by the fact that the graduates, students, and patients looked to Dr. Brown for their advice and help. After all, in India, those of mature years held the honored position of the family. The acute personnel and financial problems of the early war years caused the governing body to decide that after 1940, no more students would be admitted to the MBBS course. Students thereafter were admitted to the course for licentiate in medicine and surgery, which had been introduced by the Punjab State Medical Faculty to replace the old LSMFP. The LMS was a five-year course with intermediate science as entrance. The curriculum was based on the MBBS, but the standard of examination was less stringent. In 1943, the financial deficit, together with the difficulty of recruiting new staff in India or abroad, led the governing body to inform the government that they regretted their inability to undertake the responsibility of admitting any more students to the licentiate course. In view of the obligation of the college as a provincial school of medicine for women, government help was requested to enable those enrolled to complete their course. The response was considered an evident answer to prayer. The government, recognizing the value of the work to the province, gave an immediate grant of 10,000 rupees toward the deficit, and the per capita grant for each Punjabi student was raised from 300 rupees to 1,000 rupees. Assurance was given that further financial consideration would shortly be given. Also, sanction was given for the licentiate course to be maintained in the college for 10 years after the cessation of war. Thus encouraged, the school made plans for the continuation of the course. Almost immediately, offers began coming in from people ready to join the staff, and a number of temporary helpers volunteered when they were most needed. Here was evidence that God was still watching over his own. While the governing body was considering the future of the work, they realized that the higher standard of medical education visualized for the immediate post-war years demanded a great increase in teaching personnel, more equipment, and consequently, greatly increased expenses. In order to reach these aims, it was essential to enlist the help of other Christian bodies having similar aims and purposes. In 1944, a letter went from the governing body to 12 societies inviting their cooperation. The way had already been paved by an action of the governing body in January 1942, when they voted to append the following footnote to Appendix A of the Constitution. In order to ensure the continuance of the essential policies of the college as originally established, and at the same time to enlist other Christian bodies in the work, it was decided to invite cooperation on the part of other organizations having similar aims and purposes, either on the basis of their own confession of faith, if such are acceptable to the body of governors, or upon acceptance by their representatives of the historical basis of the college. Dame Edith Brown did not concur with this action, but once again, the far-seeing governing body sided against her.